soldiers throughout history have been given land in return for service. So the Australian government and the state governments in particular were tasked with coming up with a plan, a feasible plan to put people on the land. So in Queensland, in the early part of 1916, the Queensland government started to look at areas that they could provide land for soldiers to come back.
And they settled on Beerburrum because it was Crown land and close to the railway.
Exactly. It was in a very good location. So the proximity was a lot more important than the actual fertility of the land. In early 1916, they did send surveyors out to go and survey the land, and they came back and they said, yeah, the land's the best on the eastern side of the railway rather than on the western side of the railway, and they put the settlement initially on the western side of the railway.
And they were suggesting that they grow pineapples and citrus, and of course having the railway line, they could get them out to market. But
exactly.
Just how realistic was this plan in terms of you're getting these soldiers back, many of them wounded physically and mentally, really struggling to cope?
Part of the problem was that the governments didn't comprehend the magnitude of the injuries and the mental injuries that soldiers had in the first place. So they thought that, you know, by giving them some land, land is what people always want to better their lives. And so by giving them land, they were helping them by providing them the opportunities to better themselves and also provide funding for that. But in reality, of course, not all of these soldiers were farmers. And so you found that a lot of people weren't really suited to that way of life. Yes, a lot of them were injured and that, but these were not amputees. These were not people that had suffered major physical disabilities. These were still ordinary, you know, people that have returned from the wars who could be assumed could live a normal life. So I think the main reason why it failed was more down to the individual people, that they weren't really suited for life on the land. But you know, the government saw that pineapples were being grown in the region, and particularly to the north of Beerburrum, actually more onto the Sunshine Coast proper, there was a very large pineapple and citrus growing area. So it wasn't completely naive to assume that they could suddenly start growing pineapples there. But I think that they were just overwhelmed by what it really takes to plant and to create a cultivation from scratch.
And I noticed with this that they were actually required to build their own home and establish crops to stay on the land because it wasn't freehold, it was leasehold. So that was all a condition of it?
That's right. It was leasehold. So they were able to get somewhere up to 40 acres of land, of which they had to demonstrate that they were settled on it, and they had to clear a certain percentage of it. So initially, the soldiers actually had to clear the land themselves.
And I'm reading this and imagining it at the time, they were using explosives to get
right.
stumps out,
exactly.
poison, horses.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was very, very labor and manual intensive. I mean, to take down a tree, a gum tree of sorts that's been there for a few hundred years, they're pretty big. So they had to cut them down first. And there are photographs of the time, just the size of the trees are massive.
No chainsaws in those days.
No chainsaws, that's right. So they would actually have to go and cut it down themselves. So they were able to get the tools and equipment from the state, but they had to do the work themselves. Basically had to put gelignite under them, blow them up and pull them out. So it's not uncommon for stories of people being injured because of that, of course. You then had to sort of fertilize the land, you then had to irrigate the land, and then you had to then start growing the crops. And pineapples take a couple of years from when they start to when they're actually being able to be harvested. So it was quite a slow process.
I'm reading one of these stories of a James Robertson Munro who was shot in the foot at the Gallipoli landing and then repatriated to Australia. He was talking about how he was struggling to eke out an existence. And he says, I've had a very hard time of it lately, having to give away three of my little children for adoption. Too poor to keep them. I have three left.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of them, you know, struggled a bit. Again, a lot of these soldiers were coming from the lower social stratas anyway. So even without the war, they would have been struggling to make ends meet. Then putting them into a situation where there's really no support for them and they have to exist by their own efforts became harder and harder. So, yes, there's lots of stories of those sort of, struggles of these soldiers. And some of them just couldn't deal with it. There was quite a few instances of suicide from the soldiers in Beerburrum. One of them, Sidney Dutton, he'd actually, walked off his land at the end of October, 1923, and he killed himself in Lang Park in Brisbane, you know, less than a month later. It was all just too much for him.
How long did it last?
Well, technically the settlement ended around about the mid-1920s, about 1926, 1927. By that stage, most of the settlers had walked off the land. The government had sort of lost interest in terms of financing and subsidizing everything. It was obviously a failure, although in its peak at about 1921, 1922, there was probably a community of about 1,500 people around Beerburrum. But that had whittled away very, very quickly.
And you did an amazing job along with the Adopt a Digger program to research a whole heap of stories and share those at the centenary of the settlement in November 2016. And the amazing thing about it was the stories you heard from living family of those soldier settlers.
Yes, that's right. I mean, none of the settlers are still around, but their children are. You know, Margaret Woods, who was born there in 1930, so after the settlement had actually officially ended, but people were still living there. She still remembers very vividly, you know, life on the settlement, dirt floors, no electricity, no shoes, no clothes, walking to school. She vividly remembers her parents telling her, you've got to get home before it gets dark in case the dingoes will get you. She had to walk into town to get the milk. And they were poor. And what she said was that she didn't know that she was poor. She just thought that was normal. So I guess a lot of the people that were living in those sort of conditions, that was normal for them. They just put up with it.
Paul Sutton, what is the legacy of the Beerburrum soldier settlement?
That's on different levels. On the larger level, it's very hard for governments to orchestrate what individuals can do for their betterment later on. State intervention is not necessarily the best, you know, mechanism for giving people opportunities. But beyond that, Beerburrum didn't exist before the soldier settlement. It exists now. You know, if you look around the town, you still see vestiges of that settlement, the main one being the School of Arts, which was built in 1919. The street names, Bar Street, Johnson Road, you know, there's a whole bunch of different roads that are named after settlers, which is still there. What we noticed during the exhibition that we did, a lot of people, whilst they might not know the history of Beerburrum, they knew that their sort of community that came from that. So there was definitely a sense of belonging. And a lot of the people that have a connection with Beerburrum were able to express that in a very emotional way, in fact. So, you know, there's still a lot of attachment to the place.